Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC New York and the Mostly Swing States Radio Network, welcome to a convention night call-in. Good evening, everyone. I'm Brian Lehrer. As we begin tonight's public radio convention coverage, hello to everyone in our kind of informal, unofficial, Mostly Swing States Radio Network here on WCPN Cleveland, WUNC Chapel Hill, WAMU Washington, Maryland, and Virginia, WDET Detroit, WHA Wisconsin Public Radio, New York and New Jersey Public Radio, and in the eye of the storm, figuratively and not literally, we're glad to say, WUSF Tampa, the Mostly Swing States Radio Network, at least for the next hour. We'll bring in our first guest, Jeff Greenfield, in just a minute, but here's our very first call-in question. Is anyone out there still undecided? You know, the pollsters tell us that there are very few people left to convince with these conventions, that in today's polarized America and with a campaign that's been going on since the first televised primary debate 15 months ago, and who remembers the May 2011 debate at the Reagan Library, even if you were paying attention, but for all these reasons, and despite the hundreds of millions of dollars being spent right now by each side, the analysis of some is that there are very few people left to actually fight over. So our first call-in question is simply, is anyone out there still undecided? If you are, call us up and check in. We will put you right on the air. Call us at 1-800-543-2543. That's 1-800-543-2543. Just count it down after 1-800-543-2543. Undecideds, if you are out there in Virginia, in Ohio, in North Carolina, in Florida, or anywhere else in our Mostly Swing States radio network, in Wisconsin, in Michigan, wherever you are, please raise your hand and tell us why. 1-800-543-2543. And as your calls are coming in, we do welcome our first guest, Jeff Greenfield, longtime political analyst on ABC, CBS, CNN, now the anchor of Need to Know on PBS, as many of you do know, and a Yahoo News columnist and a tweeter at Greenfield64. He is high above the convention floor in our broadcast seats. Hi, Jeff. Want to describe the view from up there?
Yes, I'm looking down at the podium, which appears to be something out of a modern home design effort, and an effort to warm up the scene. All of these high-tech videos are surrounded by mahogany-like wood, and the floor of the convention, or the floor of the podium, is all two-toned wood. So it's supposed to be, I guess, a contemporary, I don't know, finished basement look.
The den. It's Mitt Romney's den.
That's probably what they're going for. And the convention is in recess. They've just nominated Paul Ryan by acclamation. And before that, Mitt Romney was formally nominated for president in a roll call, which used to be the single most exciting part of the convention, and now is so unimportant that I'm not even sure C-SPAN carries it. They may bump it to C-SPAN 3. Now, that's where we are.
Great. You have covered many presidential campaigns. What do you think about the state of undecided America? To relate to our call-in question, is there enough of undecided America to go to all this trouble?
If you believe the polls, a relatively small percentage of the American electorate is undecided, and that number can be as low as 5%. And when you realize the election is going to be decided effectively in 9 states, and then figure out what the 5% in those states represent, I think the campaigns would be well advised to cancel the $2 billion in advertising and drive around the states in vans handing out $500 to a voter.
Like they do before the Iowa caucuses.
Yeah, exactly. Much more effective. By the way, I did not bring my band with me. The music has just struck up a kind of a late-night FM thing going on here, so I may lower my voice to a kind of very sensual kind of thing, Brian.
And I guess we're going to have a musical background for our Mostly Swing States radio network. Work at least for a little while,
and it's swing music.
And Western swing music. Who are the undecideds? Maybe they're not the kinds of people who listen to public radio much, because maybe they're not undecided because they're the most thoughtful, deliberative people in the country who are taking a year and a half to carefully weigh the evidence. Maybe those people have mostly decided one way or another because they have been paying attention. But the undecideds are the less engaged in politics who the candidates now have to try to reach, you think?
All of the evidence is that you are being very charitable in describing the undecideds. That I have heard professional political operatives say that one of the more intriguing aspects of this is that the undecided, and this is in his words, are the most clueless citizens in America. That the campaign simply has no resonance for them. And they, if they decide to go vote, they may decide on at the last minute, they may decide on some kind of issue that other people might think is a little off the point. I still remember the 1964 interview with a woman who said she was voting against Goldwater because she heard he wanted to sell her TV. And the interviewer said, no, he wants to sell the TVA, the Tennessee Valley Authority Public Power Project. And the voter said, I'm not taking any chances.
Let's hear from our first undecided voter. And by the way, I guess some public radio listeners are undecided because our lines fill right up. And as these folks finish up, everybody, if you're undecided, you can get in at 1-800-543-2-543. And if you can name that tune, you get extra points. 1-800-543-2-543. Danielle from Manassas, Virginia is our first caller. Hi, Danielle. Thanks for piping up. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Good. So you're undecided?
I'm undecided. I'm an avid NPR listener and highly engaged in politics.
Okay. So why are you undecided?
I'm undecided. I was honestly a Clinton supporter back in 2008, but I voted for Obama, and I haven't been completely impressed with his ability to kind of try to bring the two different sides together in Congress and move legislation forward, and I liked Romney's record when he was governor of Massachusetts, but I haven't been overwhelmed with his VP choice. So for me, I am going to be watching the conventions. I am going to be watching the debates and see what they have to say on issues that I care about.
What could Mitt Romney or this convention as a whole do to bring you into the tent?
I'm interested in hearing them talk about things that they haven't really been expressing yet, like issues of foreign policy, issues of kind of how we're going to deal with some crises in the world, like drought and climate change and food insecurity and things that tend not to really be discussed. And I'd like to hear Paul Ryan talk. I haven't been a fan of the Ryan budget, so I'd like to hear them talk about kind of what their budget plans are and what it would mean for America versus what Obama's put forward the past few years.
Danielle, a great start. Thank you so much. And let's go to another undecided caller, Tanya in Cedar Point, Wisconsin. Hi, Tanya.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you so much. So are you undecided?
Yes, I am. I have a hard time believing all the stuff, the things that you hear are, there's just so much fighting between the two that they're really not bringing out the points and what they really want to get done. I really believe that we need to do something about alternative energy, and Obama wants to do things like that, but I don't believe anybody has put him, it took us 8 years to get into our debt, and expect him to get out in 4 years. That's like spending the credit card in 3 hours. You can spend $1,000.
So far you sound like an Obama supporter. Are you undecided?
Well, I'm not sure because, like I say, we need to get the country in order. But I don't hear anybody or Obama or Romney specifying how we're going to do the right thing. It's just a lot of fighting, and that's frustrating.
Tanya, thank you very much. Listeners, if you are undecided, call us up, 1-800-543-2-543, 1-800-543-2-543. By the way, Jeff Greenfield, I see you tweeted a possible Romney acceptance speech in 140 characters. Did you memorize it?
I can paraphrase it. That was the... I'm part of Yahoo, and we do a thing called Hash Out. And the challenge was, I hope you'll do it for Obama. I think it was, we gave him the keys to the car. We're still in a ditch. I'll rely on American Drive to get us out of it, something like that, which I think is not actually a bad thing. If I may, I think the most intriguing thing about what a real speech would be, and it goes to the heart of these undecided voters, there seems to be this feeling here that Romney has to be more likable to tell us the kind of stories that the first George Bush did and Bill Clinton did. And if I were thinking about it again, I think what I would tweet, because he's not given to that kind of emotive stuff and says he's not going to do it, is others tell you they feel your pain. I want to make life less painful. And not try to pretend he's the most empathetic guy in the world, but to argue, yeah, I may be a little stiff and I may be a little standoffish, but I know what to do to get the country back where it belongs.
Yeah, George Will put it on ABC this week on Sunday. He has to communicate, in a sense, I may not feel your pain, but I can fix your pain. But yeah, he doesn't want to come out and say, I may not feel your pain.
Well, it's interesting. I think if I had to bet now, Ann Romney tonight will tell the stories that he's an empathetic guy and he really cares about people. And Mitt Romney may give us a throwback to the kind of acceptance speech that, say, Ronald Reagan gave in 1980, where there was nothing until the silent prayer at the end that you could describe as emotional. And I kind of like that as an old retired speechwriter. You know, I can't imagine Franklin Roosevelt getting up and saying, you know, when I had polio, they told me I'd never walk again. But I learned to stand, and I can make America stand up again. It would have been unthinkably unseemly back then. And, you know, now we have basically Oprah-type acceptance speeches. And if Romney, tries to do something different, he ought to get some points for that.
Are there any undecideds out there? 1-800-543-2-543, 1-800, then count it down, 543-2-543. Sherry in Raleigh in North Carolina. Hi, you're on the air. Actually having a little trouble with this line. Could you put Sherry up for me in the control room on line 2? Now we have you, Sherry. Hi there, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Long-time NPR listener. My view was I'm a registered Democrat, but my feel is we need Obama is he stopped the bleeding pretty much, but I need Romney to make some serious business decisions in 4 years. But then I want to get Obama back because he's so politically savvy in my sense, and he has the empathy of the people.
That's a really interesting thought. Because underlying that, I think, you really like Obama and the values that he stands for, but you actually don't trust him to have the skills to fix the economy.
Right. There's the people that are in his ear. I appreciate what he's done in the 4 years because America was going down fast when he took office, and I applaud him for that. But Romney, I want to, but I tell you, it sounds like he's a puppet. He won't disclose his... You know, what he's not answering is what makes me not want to vote for him, what he's not saying. So wow. That's what makes me apprehensive. And I really enjoy your show. I love all your guests. That's my point.
Sherry and Raleigh, thank you very, very much. You were saying, wow, Jeff Greenfield?
Well, you know what this reminds me of is I was going to say Grover Cleveland, you know, who was removed after one term and then got reelected, but it's almost like Winston Churchill. Thank you for winning World War II. Now we're going to throw you out and bring in labor. And 5 years, 6 years later, they say, Winston, we need you again. Come on back.
It's a great analogy. It's the opposite.
It's, you know, you really did a great job. You saved us from the Depression, but you don't know what to do now. But in 4 years, we need you back again to be the right values guy. It is. Let me say this. That may be an undecided voter, but it is one of the more complex notions about how to vote I think I've ever heard. It may be unique.
We have sophisticated listeners on public radio, as you know. Jeff Greenfield from PBS's Need to Know, among other things. I want to play a clip of RNC Chairman Reince Priebus speaking on CNN on Sunday after Candy Crowley asked him what this convention will be about.
I think it's incumbent on us to do two things. One, we still have to prosecute the president as far as whether he fulfilled the mission that he laid out in 08. And he didn't. But the second piece is telling the story about a man that's decent, honorable, gave away his father's inheritance, started something from nothing and created a great business, five good boys, saved the Olympics, governed in a difficult state as a Republican, and he was very successful. We need someone to fix this economy, and Mitt Romney is the one that can do it.
So that was an interesting choice of words. Someone to fix the economy, Mr. Fix-It. But also he said, prosecute the president. And he said that several times on different networks that I've heard myself over the last few days, so we must have said it in a lot of places. Is that why Virginia Governor and former State Attorney General Bob McDonnell will speak tonight, and then former Prosecutor Chris Christie was selected to give the keynote address because they're literally looking for people who have the language to prosecute the president?
Well, I don't think we're going to get a bill of indictment. I think in the case of Virginia, it is, as you pointed out in your introduction, a swing state. The Democrats won it last time for the first time since 1964. The Republicans really want it back. I think Christie's a different story. I don't think it's the prosecutor. I think Chris Christie is exactly what Mitt Romney is not, in every way, from physiognomy to language. He speaks his mind. He's extremely comfortable in his own skin. He's got a rough and ready sense of humor. And, my slogan for him, if he runs in 2016, is, hey, you, I'm talking to you. You know, he does not have the politician's image of a calculated, every word has to be focused through guy. And I think he's there for, white working class men. Because the number, it's been interesting this weekend to talk to people who really know numbers. The number 61 and 62. Is floating around the more knowledgeable people. What that means is if Romney can't hit 62% of the white vote, he almost certainly can't win, given what's going to happen with the black and Hispanic vote.
So let me play a clip of Chris Christie himself talking to New Jersey Public Radio about what he thinks he brings to the National Party stage.
You really need to know what my role in the Republican Party is nationally. I'm the keynote speaker Tuesday night. I got a pretty good gig in the Republican Party nationally. Okay, so that's my role. And I am not going to be someone who is going to give in to you all wanting to label me.
So I guess when we listen to that...
Did you hear my slogan there, Brian? I'm talking to you.
Right. So if he's talking to working-class white males, I guess that's a tone that might be appealing. Do you think that there's a risk that he comes off as too much of an angry, tough guy for some of the other kinds of swing voters that they need to reach? You know, they're trying to do better with women and they're trying to do better with Latinos.
Yeah, my hunch... If I had to make a bet, and that's all this is I think he's going to be pretty effective tonight. I think he is smart enough to know that, contrary to my wise guy, slogan, he can't come off, as somebody out of an early Martin Scorsese movie. But I do think that his appeal has to do in great measure with, if I may quote the late Howard Cosell, telling it like it is. And to me, in this day and age, where so much political speech is so obviously, blatantly calculated and cooked and processed, a person speaking clear, plain English is not just attractive to one gender or another. I think it goes beyond that, actually.
All right. Jeff Greenfield, longtime political analyst on ABC, CBS, CNN, now the anchor of Need to Know on PBS, and a Yahoo News columnist and a tweeter at Greenfield64. High above the convention floor in our broadcast seats. Thank you very much for competing with the sound of the stage. You even were competing with John Boehner there at the end. Thanks a lot, Jeff. We really appreciate your help.
A pleasure.
And listeners, we'll continue with your calls in just a minute. Is anyone out there still undecided? Call us at 1-800-543-2543. 1-800-543-2543. Meanwhile, post your comments to our politics website, itsafreecountry.org, and we'll continue in a minute with our convention night call-in on the Mostly Swing States radio network.
WNYC is supported by Courgette Records, presenting Can't Take a Hint, Harry Shearer's album of new and original songs with appearances by Dr. John, Jane Lynch, The Fountains of Wayne, Jamie Cullum, and more. Now available on iTunes, Amazon, and harryshearer.com.
intense fighting in Syria has kept the country off limits to many reporters. On the next Leonard Lopate Show, The New Yorker's John Lee Anderson talks about how he's managed to visit the cities that have been liberated by the rebels and explains the complex dynamics of the Syrian civil war. Plus, a look at Paul Ryan's career and what he brings to this year's Republican ticket. Join us for The Leonard Lopate Show every weekday at noon.
I'm Amy Eddings. Stay with WNYC through the evening for convention coverage. We'll have the major speeches, including Governor Christie's keynote and commentary from WNYC's Bob Henley and New Jersey Public Radio's Nancy Solomon.
From WNYC in New York and the Mostly Swing States Radio Network, this is a convention night call-in on WCPN Cleveland, WUNC Chapel Hill, WAMU Washington, Virginia, Maryland, WDET Detroit, Wisconsin Public Radio, WHA, New Jersey Public Radio, New York Public Radio, and Convention Central, WUSF Tampa. I'm Brian Lehrer. The question on the table for the next few minutes, is anyone out there still undecided on August 28th? And we were talking about Chris Christie, so let's go to undecided Matt in Hoboken, New Jersey. Hi, Matt. You're on the air.
Hi, Brian. Thank you so much for taking my call.
So you're undecided?
I am, yes.
How come?
I think a lot of people, and I definitely include myself in this, in this election are so incredibly turned off by the negative tack that both campaigns have taken in recent months. You know, from the Obama side, you've got the ad saying that Mitt Romney somehow caused someone's wife to die as a result of losing insurance. On the Romney side, you have ads saying that Obama removed the work requirement in healthcare, and welfare, all of which are untrue. I think ultimately what's going to swing undecided voters like myself is going to be which candidate in the remaining months between now and Election Day shows an ability not just in his character but in his policies to govern the country as a whole, the united country, the middle, and as far on either extreme as possible, although obviously the entire thing will never be possible. And I have to say there is a lot of time to go still, but up to this point, it really does appear, and it may just be a facet of being in office, that the president has shown a bit more inclination to govern for the country as a whole and to compromise. You would expect
Romney or Paul Ryan in the next couple of nights convince you that they would do that?
Well, I think Mitt Romney won the Republican primary largely for his economic and business background, and he would be expected to take a relatively conservative position on those issues. And I think people expect, and even the majority of people, again, self-included, want that from him. But I think his embrace of such very conservative policies on social issues and on international affairs, declaring China a currency manipulator, this whole mess that's happened recently with abortion, I think that has scared people into wondering whether he, right, and particularly whether Paul Ryan, is so politically to the right that he'll never be able to represent a more moderate point of view, which is a shame, especially for Mitt Romney, as when he was governor of Massachusetts, he was, the moderate Northeastern Republican.
Matt, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you very much. And we'll go to Anthony in Tampa. Hi, Anthony. You're not at the convention, are you?
No, I'm not. I'm sitting in my driveway in my car.
As a Florida swing voter?
Yes, I am. I'm just in a big dilemma. I'm a business owner and I'm a Republican. I believe in the Republican principles. But, George Bush's second term was so much better than his first term, because he was building his legacy. That's all he focused on. He didn't focus on getting reelected the next four terms. And I'm just really looking forward to what Obama could do in the next four years. But he hasn't done the greatest thing yet. So I'm just hoping he can do that. But I've got this, this less government mentality. I've always had it my whole life. So I'm sort of right in between there, and I go back and forth every day.
What'll decide it for you? Is there something Obama could say? Is there something Romney could say? Or don't you believe their words, and so it's not going to be from the words?
I think that over the next between now and the election, if Romney demonstrates over and over again that he's a very trustable guy. I've had to deal with these venture capitalists before. They're so self-focused. What's good for them? And I think that's what scares me mostly about Romney is my dealing with these people. They're just so self-centered and self-focused that scares me. But if he really shows that he's trustworthy consistently throughout the next few months, I think that could swing me.
Anthony, thank you for your call. Let's go to Melinda in Fayetteville in North Carolina. Hi, Melinda. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you?
I'm great. You're an undecided voter?
Yes, I am.
How come?
Well, I think what's more important in this presidential election is going to be what happens to the House and the Senate. We have a Senate and a House. We have a House that's broken. That is so polarized that nothing can be done. We're watching TV ads that are just revolting. I spent so much time changing channels to avoid listening to them. I'm not happy with either candidate. And frankly, I may not know until election day who I'm going to vote for.
And what is it that you're waiting to hear? Is it about making Congress less dysfunctional and less polarized?
I don't know that they could even make a statement that would convince me that that would happen. And I think the mistake that we have is that, aside from being in my 50s, I work full-time, I'm a full-time college student, we have people in this country that are voting that don't even understand how our government functions. They don't understand the checks and balances. They're so uneducated in just the basics of civics. And these are people that are making decisions, going into a voting booth, making decisions based on emotion instead of what's necessary to fix the things that are broken.
Melinda, thank you so much. Let's go to James in Akron next. Hi, James. Thanks for calling in. We've got about a minute for you. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. My thing is this, and here's what I'm trying to find out exactly. What's in the Romney plan? Because I've been reading that because I'm more concerned with the health insurance and Social Security, and I'm not getting the message that I want to hear. I'm reading it. I'm not quite understanding it.
But you still could.
The last couple of days.
You still could get it from Ryan. There's something that you're open to there or intrigued by there.
Well, yeah, because see, I'm not so concerned with the economy as a lot of other people are, because I don't think anybody with as polarized as Congress is that anybody can turn the economy around until people decide to vote for, you know, the little guy, which I'm concerned with. So I have to concern myself with something else. Mm-hmm. And my concern is what's going to happen with the with the healthcare situation, mm-hmm. That's and Social Security. Those are the things. And I'm 65 years old, so, you know, I'm looking at that. I don't.
And you're not sure right who now, to not sure who to trust on that.
Well, I'm trying to find out exactly what both people are saying about it.
And I have to leave it there for time, James. Thank you. Be curious to hear from you later in the week, maybe after you do hear from Paul Ryan, who I'm pretty sure we'll talk about that tomorrow night, so maybe you'll call us again. This is a convention night call-in, if you're just joining us, on the Mostly Swing States radio network. One important swing state this year is New Hampshire. And I had a chance yesterday to talk with former New Hampshire Governor John Sununu, a leading and, as you'll hear, very feisty Romney surrogate. We talked about jobs and energy and taxes, and I asked him why in the deep blue Northeast is New Hampshire a swing state at all?
Well, it is interesting. We have Vermont in the west, Maine in the east, Massachusetts to the south, and Quebec to the north. We sort of are an island of sanity up there. But I think it's people really do believe in the state motto, live free or die. And people in New Hampshire are very much involved in the political side of things. There's a lot of self-governance. Our cities and towns are a very important part of the process, And we have people that work on boards of selectmen, school boards, and really do affect the pocketbook of themselves and their fellow citizens. So they're not just trivial jobs. And it is a process of self-governance. I like to say we tithe our time in politics in New Hampshire.
So this election, as you said, as you know, is about jobs more than anything and long-term growth versus long-term decline. So on jobs, the Democrats see Republicans as being for this utopian world where just by cutting government and cutting regulation, the market will grow jobs through the invisible hand. Is that the essence of the Romney jobs plan?
No, the essence of the Romney jobs plan is stop putting your foot on the neck of small businesses with taxes and overregulation, and don't expect the process to function without any taxes. You got to have some, and don't expect the process to function without any regulation. You need some level, but this administration has gone so overboard that it has choked the job-making machine in America. And you talk to small businesses across this country, they're not hiring now because they're scared of Obamacare. They're not hiring now because they're afraid of the uncertainty on taxes. They're not hiring now. They would rather give somebody overtime than hire and have to be burdened by the overregulation that comes every time you hire a new person. That's the kind of climate we have now. This administration does not understand that government can suppress incentives, and they have suppressed incentives. Mitt Romney wants to bring those incentives back and move things forward, and understands that one of the costs of doing things in America, one of the things that is a restriction on your ability to hire people, is the cost of energy. We have more coal, and now with shale gas, more natural gas than anywhere else in the world. And this administration may use nice words, but they have been killing the coal industry. We're going to shut down dozens of coal plants this year because of an overactive EPA that is nitpicking on regulations. And we have inhibited the development of our shale gas. Mitt Romney understands that if we develop coal, oil, natural gas, we unleash the power of our energy resources, and we do encourage the alternatives as well, that we can be a North America that's energy independent and have cheap energy for our businesses.
The Obama people would say that there's more drilling taking place than at any time in many years with respect to oil, that they're letting fracking for natural gas go forward as is deemed environmentally safe, and that The oil market is global anyway, so that when Romney talks about being energy self-sufficient through the development of oil, there's really no such thing because it all goes into this global marketplace that we have to buy it back from.
It shows you what artists they are at lying with half-truths. Let's talk about the oil production. Oil production is up because it's taking place in places where the federal government couldn't stop it. On the areas where federal permitting is involved, it's been reduced to less than half of what it was when he came into office. Lie number one. Lie number two, the EPA has got its foot on the neck of the shale gas people and preventing them, using all kinds of excuses to prevent the growth of that to take place at the pace that it should to free things up. And number three, this is an administration that has killed coal. The president bragged about the fact that he was going to make it such that if you wanted to use coal, you'd go bankrupt, and his EPA has done that.
Do we want a coal future anymore? Do we want a maximal fossil fuel future? When Romney talked in his energy speech last week about defunding research for renewable energy, it makes it sound like he thinks that we can have an entirely fossil fuel future, and he never even mentioned global warming as a factor.
Well, the fact is that fossil fuels are the mainstay for at least the next generation and probably two. And if you are in fairyland and thinking it's otherwise, you don't understand technology. I'm an engineer. My PhD is mechanical engineering. I can tell the difference between the fairy tales of those who think alternative energies are around the corner. And this administration has spent $90 billion playing games with their cronies trying to move that legend forward. We are going to be dependent on coal, oil, and natural gas as a world, for the next generation or so. The Chinese and the Asians understand that. It's about time that we start untying our arm from behind our back and start giving that asset to the American people so we can be competitive again.
My guest, former Governor John Sununu of New Hampshire. Republicans rail against redistribution of wealth, but we have a market-based redistribution of wealth in this country. The top 1% owns 40% of the wealth, when in, say, President Reagan's day, they used to own 25%. We could become a Latin American nation the way we're headed, the critics say. Are you concerned about this 30-year redistribution of wealth?
I'm concerned about the fact that one of the reasons some of that has happened is that this country has trended towards over-regulating the growth of new businesses. It's new businesses that move wealth from the top to the middle class. It's the small businesses of America owned by the middle class that allows the redistribution of wealth in the direction we want. And the more you choke that off, the more skewed that number goes. So with a president like Mitt Romney that understands that strength, I'm convinced you're going to see that number moving to a more equitable level.
So you think CEOs make so much more than their average employees today than they did when we were kids because of regulation rather than because of, let's say, deregulation of the banks?
It's not CEO salary that sets that percentage that you cited.
That's one step.
No, it's the most trivial stat. The bulk of that wealth at the top is made by capital gains, by people who have invested in businesses, by the people at Apple, by the people at Google, by the people at Oracle, and all the employees that are stockholders there. That wealth redistribution has occurred on the basis of stock ownership. And what we need to do is encourage that kind of stock ownership to the smaller businesses and encourage smaller businesses to have ownership in those assets and intellectual properties in America that allow more of a distribution of that wealth down into the middle class.
But if you're going to bring capital gains tax rates into it, then we know that Governor Romney only pays about 13% in taxes because he gets so much of his income from capital gains compared to, say, vice presidential nominee Paul Ryan, who gets more of it in other ways. And he pays 20% of taxes, even though he makes much less money than Romney. Do we want to keep that capital gains advantage?
You know, inherent in the question you ask is the snide disdain that the president displays towards those who want to create a successful business and profit on the capital gain side and enjoy the fact that there is an incentive for them to do so with a low capital gains tax. It is unbelievable to me how inherently snide those comments are from people who want to suggest there's something wrong when people have that kind of success. There isn't something wrong. That is, in fact, the most important single ingredient to get America back on the right track. And there shouldn't be this level of envy to those who have been successful in that direction.
But if the people who are entrepreneurs were only required to pay the same rate of taxes, not a higher rate, but the same rate of taxes as people who go to work at jobs for the same income, would that provide such a disincentive to create new businesses?
Yeah, it would, because investment carries a risk, and you have to encourage people to take that risk. Otherwise, they'll take the easy way out and just start earning a salary. You want them to take a risk of investing money, investing time, and in some cases, investing their lives and their careers to move things forward. Yes, when you have to compensate for a risk, you have to provide an extra incentive.
Former New Hampshire Governor John Sununu, thank you so much, sir.
Thank you.
Governor Sununu and I had that conversation yesterday. This is a convention night call-in on the Mostly Swing States radio network. Post your comments about our program on our politics website, itsafreecountry.org. Itsafreecountry.org. More in a minute.
WNYC support comes from Metropolitan Talent Presents Dead Can Dance performs at the Beacon Theater tomorrow and Thursday night as part of their world tour, their first in 7 years. Tickets available at Ticketmaster.com or 866-858-0008.
This week, as Republicans gather for their convention in Tampa, WNYC brings you special coverage on air and online. Join Brian Lehr each night at 7 for the latest from WNYC reporters, interviews with local and national newsmakers, and live calls from swing state voters and you. Then tune in each morning and throughout the day for election updates and analysis. Find it all on WNYC, 93.9 FM, AM 820, and online at itsafreecountry.org.
I'm Amy Eddings. Stay with WNYC through the evening for RNC coverage. We'll have the major speeches, including Governor Christie's keynote, and commentary from WNYC's Bob Henley and New Jersey Public Radio's Nancy Solomon.
From WNYC in New York and the mostly swing states radio network, this is a convention night call-in. I'm Brian Lehr here on WCPN Cleveland, WUNC Chapel Hill, WAMU Washington, Maryland, and Virginia, WDET Detroit, WHA Wisconsin Public Radio, New York and New Jersey Public Radio, and WUSF Tampa Convention Central. We still have our caller question out. And that is anyone out there undecided? 1-800-543-2543. In just a minute, we'll meet three reporters from three of those swing states. But is anyone out there still undecided? 1-800-543-2543. And Jacob in Green Bay, you're on the air. Hi, Jacob. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks.
Still undecided?
I am. I actually am undecided as to whether I'm going to vote for Mitt Romney or submit a protest vote for Gary Johnson.
Gary Johnson, the Libertarian Party candidate. Were you a Ron Paul supporter in the primary season, the Libertarian Republican?
To some extent. I thought Ron Paul would have been a better choice than Romney, but Gary Johnson was by far better than all the rest. I think on social issues, he's a little better than Ron Paul. On immigration, he's a little better than Ron Paul.
But Obama's out.
Right. I like what Obama's done about don't ask, don't tell. I liked his early promise not to raid medical marijuana facilities, but he's reneged on that promise, and he has done some things to the economy that I think are just disasters down the road.
So you sound like a libertarian, but Romney could still get you. How?
He could. I feel like those economic questions are very important. Paul Ryan, obviously from my state, he's his budget's often talked about as being extreme right-wing. I think of it as weak sauce, but it's doable if Republicans get enough seats in the House, and it will be a little better than what we've got. On the other hand, 4 years from now, when Mitt Romney and the Republicans have more control, are they going to start leveraging that control on social issues? That would really turn me off.
Jacob, thank you so much. And Amy on Long Island, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. I'm really an avid NPR listener, so this is really kind of a thrill.
Great. And you're undecided.
I am. I'm a registered Democrat, but actually I did not vote for Obama back 4 years ago. I didn't feel he was experienced enough, and I haven't been very pleased. But I think my biggest issue is with all the negative campaigning going on and everything I hear back and forth, I feel like I haven't heard anything either candidate about this is how we're going to change things and this is how we're going to fix things and here's a plan. I feel like it's just a lot of swirl on social issues, which, while important, you know, for me as, you know, someone in that 24 to 34 bracket, doesn't really tell me, you know, how the next 4 years of my life are going to go.
What do you need to hear?
You know, I need to hear, are we incentivizing small business? Are we not incentivizing small business? Are we reforming healthcare? Are we not reforming healthcare? You know, Obamacare is still going back and forth. You know, stuff could be repealed. I believe Romney said it'd be one of his first acts. So is that a definite, or is that just rhetoric for, you know, the right wing right now? And I just feel like nobody's kind of given me a clear idea of, if elected or if reelected, this is what I'm going to do to make your lives better.
Amy, thank you so much. On our convention night call-in, here on our informal swing states, mostly swing states, radio network. Post your comments to our politics website, itsafreecountry.org. With me now, Bob Henley from New York and New Jersey Public Radio. He is in Tampa tonight for the show, but covers Chris Christie in real life in New Jersey. Michael Pope, Northern Virginia reporter for WAMU, and Joe Ingles, State House News reporter for Ohio Public Radio and Television. Hello, reporters. Can you all hear me?
Hello.
Yes.
Hello.
Brian.
Great. Hello. Evening.
So Joe Ingles from Ohio Public Radio and Television, I ask you as an Ohio State alum, are there any undecided Buckeyes left?
Well, you know, there's a small sliver. If you look at the polls, there's a small sliver of people who say they're undecided. But there's a much larger group that say, hey, we could change our minds between now and then. So right now in Ohio, we're being barraged with ads all over the place, just nasty ads mostly. And a lot of people are kind of saying they're tuning them out at this point because they're getting so many of them.
And that's certainly one of the themes we've heard from our undecided voter callers this evening, and that is everybody hates these ads and are being turned off to both sides to some degree by them. Joe, can you tell who the undecided Buckeyes are mostly and what they're looking for?
Well, a lot of what your callers have been saying, they say they're looking for specifics. They're saying that they don't really know yet who they want, that they like a little of each and they dislike a little of each. And so they're still up for grabs. And it's very unclear at this point what's going to resonate with them.
Michael Pope, how about in the swing state, or should I say the swing Commonwealth of Virginia? Is anyone still undecided?
There are definitely undecided voters between Obama and Romney. We see that also track with a very competitive U.S. Senate race here between Kane and Allen. That's also extremely tight, and the undecideds have yet to go one way or the other.
What are they looking for, and who are they? Any idea?
That's a good question. Who are they? Are the people that aren't quite as partisan in the sense that, you know, people that have already made up their minds. Those people are kind of easy gets for the party. The more difficult people to get to vote for you are the ones that wait to the last minute of an election, which is why we see all the intense politics heading up into Election Day.
So Bob Henley from WNYC and New Jersey Public Radio. New Jersey is not expected to be a swing state in the presidential election, but it is in state politics, as Governor Christie was elected in 2009 after a long period of Democrats winning all the statewide elections. Since he's going to speak tonight as the keynote, what was Chris Christie's swing voter appeal?
Well, it's interesting if you look at particularly Middlesex County, a traditionally Democratic bastion that President Obama carried significantly, and then Chris Christie, within a year, Brian, just a year later, you know, picked that up and got that county. What he's been able to do is come across with this idea of pragmatism, in the sense that he is willing to take on the institutional interests, whether it be the teachers union. In fact, one could say that Christie owes a debt of gratitude to the New Jersey Education Association, because a pivotal moment, and I think maybe even in national political history, was when Governor Christie, faced with a very difficult economy, asked the teachers to take a pay freeze so they could save the new teacher hires. When they blew him off and said they wouldn't, that really put him into national orbit. So Christie's significance now is more as a thought leader, if you will, within the Republican Party. He's vice chair of the Republican Governors Association. Consider the fact that of the 29 governors that are in the United States now, 21 have taken office, Brian, since 2010. So I think this is happening at the state level, and we're missing it.
And I think a lot of turnover in Congress, a lot of turnover in governorships is a sign of discontent in the country. Will he bring that same formula to tonight's speech?
Well, he told us he was, we had an hour with him, local reporters, where he talked about what some of the preview that was going on. And he did say, you know, his strength is working extemporaneously, not the speech that it's got, you know, teleprompters driving it. And he's done 88 town halls, and he's been known to be able to read a room. This room is too big to read that way, as Bill Clinton found out when his keynote speech never ended. And so now, he did say to us, though, you know, Bob, if I see somebody looking at their watch, I reserve the right to depart from my prepared remarks.
Mm.
So he set the stage that he's, you know, he's going to go with the crowd.
A little uncertainty, a little flying without a net. So that brings a little edge to those who are kind of spectators with that in mind. Yes, it's definitely a bigger audience, a bigger room, as you say, than he works around New Jersey. It's going to be a room of about 30 million people if the estimated television audience is accurate. Joe Ingles, Ohio Governor John Kasich will be speaking. Tell us what his role is likely to be.
And largely, he's the same way. He said he's going to speak off the cuff. He doesn't like to stick to a teleprompter. And he's spoken at the RNC before, but he's hoping this time, the third time, will be a charm. He said he wasn't really happy with the two previous speeches that he made at the RNC because there was so much commotion on the floor. What we're likely to hear about in this speech, he'll probably talk about how he's lowered taxes for Ohioans at the state level. He has done that. But his critics would say, yes, he's also cut money for local governments and schools. He'll probably talk about how he's filled an $8 billion shortfall and put hundreds of millions of dollars in the state's rainy day fund that he said only had 89 cents when he took over. Both of those figures have been disputed, but it's kind of hard to know exactly what those figures are, so he'll probably use those tonight, or, you know, he has in the past. And he's probably going to talk about the balancing of the budget in Ohio. Ohio requires our budget to be balanced every 2 years. Some other states don't have that requirement. And we hear Governor Kasich often refer to those states, some of those states, as being a mess. He likes to sometimes pick on California, so we'll see if he picks on them as having a budget that's a mess. He'll probably talk about the need to loosen regulations on businesses. He's done that here, and some of his critics say, though, he has allowed corporate lobbyists to have too much say in writing the rules. And he might also talk about how he supports presidential candidate Mitt Romney's push to crack down on what's perceived as unfair foreign trade practices. This Saturday, Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan were in Powell, Ohio, just outside of Columbus, and Mitt Romney talked about fair trade with China. And he said when he gets in office, he's going to make sure that there really is fair trade and there won't be any cheating. Governor Kasich says he encourages Mitt Romney to do that.
When does Governor Kasich speak? When is that speech scheduled for?
We're hearing about 8 o'clock shortly thereafter.
All right. So coming up in just a few minutes, Governor John Kasich of Ohio. Michael Pope, Virginia Governor Bob McDonald is speaking too. When is that and what are you expecting from him?
He is going to speak sometime between 8 and 9 for about 8 minutes. His role in the night is really to focus attention on small business. He's going to be introducing a small business owner from Chantilly, Virginia, who will speak after him. And in his speech, he's going to talk about a coffee shop in Henrico, a florist in Virginia Beach, a bakery in Radford, really going to drill down on this theme of the evening, we built it. This is, of course, in reference to Obama's now infamous comment about you didn't build it. You know, one of the takeaway lines that McDonnell is going to say tonight that is likely to get some applause from the audience there in Tampa is big government didn't build America, you built America. And I would expect that to resonate with the crowd there in Tampa.
Now, Kasich will speak, McDonald will speak, but Chris Christie is the keynote. And for example, those of you who haven't heard Chris Christie very much, here he is when asked recently if he will tone down his usual in-your-face Jersey Boy style for the national audience.
I don't think they have any expectation, nor have they requested, that I have a personality-ectomy, you know, between now and next Tuesday. You know, it's kind of, they know what they're buying.
They know what they're buying. Bob, personality-ectomy. You know, not everybody gets New Jersey humor. Actually, Joe Ingles, when I moved from New York to Ohio, I realized the hard way that people didn't get my humor a lot of the time. Does Christie risk that in Ohio and around the Midwest?
Well, sort of. I would have said more so a few years ago. Our governor tends to be a lot like Chris Christie. He has some of those elements where a lot of people don't get his humor either. But, you know, people have become more accustomed to John Kasich as we've gone along in his term, and people are starting to get him a little bit more.
And Michael Pope, what about in Virginia? As it happened, I lived for 3 years in Norfolk, too, and people are often not as direct as they are in New Jersey or in Brooklyn, and they can be a little put off by that Northeast style.
That is true, and I think Governor McDonnell sort of fits into this mold of being a Virginia gentleman, I guess it's fair to call him. You know, one thing that's really striking about Governor McDonnell is the way that he is a very conservative politician. If you look at his record, if you look at his graduate thesis that he wrote for Regent University, very conservative. But he comes across as being very moderate. People associate him with job growth and economic gains. And so for Republicans, it's kind of the best of both worlds. He is a conservative, but he doesn't come across that way. He comes across as very moderate, which is how he's been successful in the political realm.
And Bob Henley, can Romney lose in the fall and have Chris Christie's stock go up, nevertheless, for 2016 by virtue of whatever happens tonight?
Well, I think that that's kind of a loaded question and hypothetical on several levels. I think if we... they're really playing a much longer game here. I ran into Roger Stone, the political Republican political strategist, and he was pointing out that in 1958, the Republicans had a really hard time losing state houses, and that set the stage for John Kennedy to squeak by, you know, Richard Nixon. Similarly, this is the kind of thing we're seeing. They are building. Think of this. We're talking about these governors from around the country. Do you see the same thing happening with the Democrats? I mean, these people have become, whether it be Bobby Jindal, McDonald, whatever, they have become national personalities. And the Democrats are at a disadvantage because I don't see the same bench developing, Brian.
Of the three governors of these states, which ones might wind up in a Romney cabinet if he wins? Michael Pope, do you see a role potentially for Governor McDonald?
There has been talk of that. I think the kind of obvious choice for McDonnell and his talents would be attorney general. But then again, I think that also is the kind of role that people might see Chris Christie in. So he might have to fight the governor of New Jersey for that position.
No, he's ruled that out. He ruled that out yesterday.
He has ruled out becoming the attorney general of the United States. How come?
Yeah. Well, I think that his whole case is that he has to turn around New Jersey. And he's having trouble, Brian. Let's look what happened with unemployment. You know, in the middle of his comeback summer, New Jersey on the comeback trail, unemployment went from 9.6 to 9.8. We have the fourth or fifth highest unemployment in the nation. So much like Andrew Cuomo in New York as governor, he has got to get things done that he can actually show. It can't be abstract. So if he was to go and become attorney general, I mean, he was a U.S. attorney already. He's got to deliver, and he's far more powerful in this national role. When I was in the lobby at the Westin Hotel, where he's holed up as vice chair of the RGA, you can't imagine the people who are coming through there. So he has, I think, a much more central role in the future of this party, staying where he is.
Joe Ingles, it's a role for Governor Kasich if Romney wins?
Well, Governor Kasich has repeatedly said that he's interested in a second term, that he would like to stay here. He's got plans for Ohio. And today he told supporters and reporters, he said that he's got a lot of surprises in store for the future. He's excited about delivering those. And he also says he feels like it's God's plan for him to be governor in Ohio right now. And that's what he wants to do. He doesn't talk about, you know, future plans on a national scale. However, we know that he did run for president once, and there's a lot of people think that he has national aspirations at some point. The question is, would he be in Romney's cabinet, and would he leave now? That's a big question mark.
And we have to leave it there with Joe Ingles, State House news reporter for Ohio Public Radio and Television, Michael Pope, Northern Virginia reporter for WAMU, and Bob Henley from New York and New Jersey Public Radio. Thank you all.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.
And that's it for this convention night call-in for our Mostly Swing State radio network. We'll be back tomorrow on most of these stations. I'm Brian Lehrer. Coverage continues from NPR.